Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Hopefully, Clinton didn't stomp you out the door, too. Because this is important. This is one of those Sundays where whatever you're doing in the background, whether you're, you know, cleaning house, whether you are lounging on the sofa, whether you're, you know, all those things that you want to be doing, whether you have to be doing, maybe you're just driving down the road. Maybe you're going out to buy wedding stuff, which is what I had to go do yesterday. I had to go buy vases to give to the mother, the grandmother, the mother-in-law, which are cool things. We were listening to the radio while we were going. Maybe you're doing those kind of things today. Public school funding. Do people realize how important that is? Please tell us, how important is that? How important is that? Our guest today, Kate Acuff, she's the school board chairman from Albemarle County, and Rosalind Schmidt, she's the assistant director of facilities planning. And I tell you, I hope you're getting paid, Rosalind, for the importance of just the title of that, because assistant director of facilities planning, important job. I can tell just by that. We're going to be talking about public school funding. Where did I get this? This is a local version of the national debate over infrastructure. People need to know, how does a community balance its needs for progress, innovation against its ability to pay for those improvements? Something that is often overlooked when you talk about, where do my taxes go? Where are people spending my money? How does this happen? Who's making these decisions? Well, we have people here who are trying to help others decide where does that money go and how it should be spent. So Kate Acuff, Rosalind Schmidt here today talking about Albemarle County, because the budget has yet to be firmly decided. Is that correct?
We passed the final budget Thursday night.
You did pass the final budget.
Correct.
Which has been submitted to the Board of Supervisors?
Yes. I mean, they passed their budget, and we adjusted our budget based on the allocation to the schools.
So now everybody knows what amount of money is being spent on buses, on classrooms, on teacher pay, on HVAC maintenance.
Yes, all of that.
And all those things. Football uniforms, all the important things that go into a budget.
It's all in there.
All in there. How much is being spent on other things that you feel are important? Because that's what we're here today about, right? We don't have enough classrooms, correct?
Correct. I mean, the way the budget looks is that we have the biggest chunk that we have each year that we negotiate is the operating budget, and that's what we just passed. And the other piece of our financing needs are the capital budget, and that's what we spend primarily so in the past decade for maintenance, but also for addressing modernization of the schools, capacity, et cetera.
Well, one of the things, you know, people always talk about pay your taxes, and then here in Albemarle County and in the city of Charlottesville, it's city council in Albemarle, it's the Board of Supervisors. It's those folks decide what my taxes should be, and then how it's distributed. So why should the schools get a greater amount of money this year and in upcoming years when other sections of government do not? And why should my taxes increase because of this?
If you look historically, the budget has been divided about 60-40 schools versus other county functions. If you look over the past 8 years since the Great Recession, we have kept our expenditures at about 6% per student increase compared with growth in spending. Is this right, Rosalyn? Mm-hmm. About a 12.5% increase for county spending. So we have had a very austere budget since the Great Recession.
You're comparing, when you say austere, comparing that to the past in Albemarle County, comparing that to other counties, other cities?
Well, compared with the past, certainly. But one way to look at expenditures is how much we spend per student. And if you look at our expenditures per student, we have somewhere over 13,500 students, and our expenditures per student are in the neighborhood of 12,000 plus, which is about $4,000 per student less than the city of Charlottesville, for example.
Really?
Yes. There's about a $4,000 per student difference.
And what would be attributed to that? I mean, how does that happen other than just, am I being foolish and saying, you know, tax money? How is that possible? Does Albemarle have that many more students that the total budget must therefore be split that much, split up that much?
I mean, the city of Charlottesville has a stronger tax base than the county does. About 25% of the county financing, about 25% of our revenues come from businesses, which is low in comparison with other jurisdictions. Secondly, with the revenue agreement we have with the city, we send over about $18 million. It's a fixed percentage, but this past year about $18 million off the top. And this was an agreement that's 30 years old that related to please don't annex any more of the county, and if you agree to do that, we will send you a certain fixed percentage. And then third, we have in the county a very strong land use program, which is great for the keeping our county beautiful, but it's not great for taxes because those lands are taken out of the tax base. So with the revenue sharing agreement with the city plus the land use, our effective tax rate is about 62.62% rather than what it looks like, 81.9%.
So it's a lot of it has to do with the fact that Albemarle is such a large county that it's land and parcel rather than business.
That's a lot of it, yes.
Again, our guest today, Kate Acuff, school board chairman from Albemarle County, Rosalyn Schmidt, assistant director of facilities planning. We are here talking today about public schools, the funding, the needs, the budget that was just put together, the needs that have been growing, ever growing, that have not been met, especially over the last decade, it seems. When I hook up with through email with my friend Phil at Albemarle and say, hey, what are some of the current topics that are going on? Let's get some guests together and put together a show. And this year I listed a handful of things as possibilities, and the only one that came back from Phil was budgeting, money, expenses, topics. That's what we got. So, Rosalyn, when your role with Albemarle County Schools is facilities planning, mm-hmm. when you go to work every day, what's at the top of the list in terms of planning?
So Kate spoke a lot of the per pupil spending and tax base. A lot of that relates to our operating side of the budget. Capital, I don't think it's as much attention. And that, if anything, has the bigger funding gap. So my job right now, planning, is a lot of planning without money. So we talk about...
that sounds fun.
Yeah, that sounds fun. So a lot of paper. No. So biggest issue planning right now is how do we handle growth? We are a growing county, and anyone that lives in Albemarle County can understand why people want to come here. But when people come here, students come here. When we have added 1,000 students since 2002 and have had no new schools, we're running out of room.
But who's doing the projections on how many students are coming? You have an anticipation on how many are coming for 2017. You had an anticipation of how many were coming for 2016. How accurate was that number?
So our enrollment projections are based on a cohort survival method. And it's terrible to use survival when you're talking about students, but we know historical trends of how many students come from kindergarten and continue to first grade to second grade. So we have a lot of historical trends. But as we start projecting out into the future, we're good a year out, 2 years out, 10, it's difficult. We can say what the historical trend is, but without knowing economy and when a developer is going to put their shovel in the ground, it's a little more educated guessing.
How accurate have your guesses been?
I just did the study, actually. I started to analyze it. We're actually under-projecting at this point. We've been studying Albemarle's numbers, and we've been probably 7 to 10% off anywhere from 5 to 10 years out from our projections.
I mean, the one thing we can say, though, is our projections are generally pretty good, mm-hmm. but they're county-wide. What we don't often predict as well is where those students will land, in which schools. And where they land is not evenly distributed around the county. And what we're seeing is growth, particularly in the urban ring schools, which is those schools that are in that 35-square-mile donut that surrounds the city of Charlottesville, they get a disproportionate number of the new students.
How much money does Albemarle County school system get from the state, if any? For those of us who aren't aware of how this works, does all the school money come from the county itself?
No, we get a relatively small amount from the state, and about $47 million of the $170 million this year, for example.
And that's based on number of students and our cost of living proportion to other localities.
Has that been going
down
like most of the other?
It's been going down. I mean, one of the unfortunate consequences of the Great Recession was that there's been a steady erosion of the per pupil expenditures by the state. It's dropped about $600 mm-hmm. per student, which alone would fund some of our capital needs. If you multiply that by 13,500 students.
I don't have my calculator with me, but I don't need to know that's
between $8 and $10 million.
That turns out to be a large number. Again, Sunday morning wake up call here on WPVC. Thanks for tuning in. All listeners are new listeners here as we're still less than a year old here at WPVC. Public school funding, capital improvements project here, Albemarle County Schools. Our guest, Roslyn Schmidt, facilities planning, Kate Acuff, school board chairman. So capital improvement. Every year it seems as though the budget, what was the word used? Not capital improvements, but the other budget.
Operating
budget never get as much money for the operating budget as you would like. That's always the case. If you ask for $100 million, Board of Supervisors says, we can only give you 84 or something. I'm just obviously picking numbers out of the air. But you never get what you ask for. That's just what it is. But the capital improvements project, that's something that requires a lot more forethought, correct?
We give it a lot of forethought, yes.
and it's not a 1 year at a time. It's a 5-10 year plan.
Right.
Facilities don't just pop up overnight.
So explain that to me. Explain how that budget works and the foresight that needs to go into it.
So our capital improvement budget is actually adopted on a 5-year window where they only approve the revenues and expenditures for the first year, but they are adopting a 5-year plan. But quite frankly, our 5-year plan has been balanced the first year, kick most of the projects out to year 6.
So put this in the idea of a homeowner for me, because I understand the operating budget is somebody who's trying to plan their monthly or even yearly budget. You know, once January 1st comes around and I'm planning, I know what my job pays, and I'm doing that for the year with here's what I need to spend on my house and my, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But put the capital budget, explain that to me in that sort of format.
So you're a homeowner, and let's say your house is built in the 1980s. You know you're going to have to replace your roof soon. You know perhaps your in-laws are going to move in sometime, and you're going to have to build additional space.
Oh, my.
Perhaps you know your air conditioning is faulty right now. So what do you plan? Do you plan the next year, or do you plan the next 10 years? And you, based on what you think your anticipated needs are, both short-term and long-term, and wavering between those two, when do you spend the big money, when do you spend the short money?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's also the case that when you're planning to build a school, for example, I mean, that can be conceived of more like a mortgage. How do you finance long-term obligations to support your infrastructure? And that is one piece of almost every homeowner, virtually every homeowner has gone through the mortgage process. You say, yes, I want a home, and it's going to take me this many years to pay for the home. And that is in one category of basically your capital investment. And then the rest of the stuff, when you pay your health insurance or you buy your groceries, that's your operating expenses. And so the issue for us now going forward, we've consistently underfunded our capital needs, and we've only been mostly covered. This year's budget, for example, has only paid 87% of the capital budget has gone only to the maintenance part of it, which is replacing the HVAC or replacing the roofs. And only 13% has gone to modifying the actual structures in proactive ways, like modernizing Red Hill Elementary School.
I understand it, but for me and for the average person that I know, is you only have one budget. Your capital improvements as a homeowner is the same as your operating budget, but you need to be smart enough to set the money aside,
right?
Because you know that you're going to need to buy a new roof, and if you don't, you look foolish. And then you need to...
But you typically finance your long-term capital improvements. Like, if we're going to build a new school, we would issue some sort of bond to raise the money to build that school.
But if the people in charge of the money are not setting it aside or saving it or funding it somehow,
they would issue bonds. I mean, basically what we're talking about going forward would be...
And that was not a slam on you, Rosalind, by the way, when I said looking foolish.
I'm sure she didn't take it that way. But, I mean, the issue going forward is we have been underfunding our basic infrastructure and capital needs. And one of the things we are considering together with the Board of Supervisors is whether or not to do a bond referendum. And we finance our capital either through special bond revenues, which is the way we've always done them, or a general referendum, which will give us cheaper money to do this investment.
Why have they been underfunded? When you talk about things, we'll come back to, I want to answer this briefly, because I think one of the things that we need to do, and it is 11:20, I want to talk about specifics in terms of the schools and some of the other things that you talk about in hallways and closets, et cetera.
But why has this, how has this happened that we've been underfunded for X number of years?
I think in part it's been a perfect storm. I mean, in 2007, the board, we were just prior to the Great Recession, the Board of Supervisors reduced the property tax rate by 6 cents. The next year, the Great Recession hit, and not only were revenues and tax assessed values were sharply down. And we've not recovered from that, frankly. There's been a great reluctance by the Board of Supervisors to raise taxes enough to cover that deficit. And we are just now working our way back to that. But that's the reason we haven't built a new school since 2002. After 2002, we probably had pretty good capacity. But since then, the very few projects that added capacity, for example, at Greer Elementary, was only done, which was completed in 2012, was built to only about a little more than half the size that was recommended. And that's a school where we're already, you know, way over capacity. So we underbuilt, and now we can't add any more space at Greer. So I think it's a perfect storm of the recession and perhaps...
And wanting to be reelected by not raising taxes and...
Oh, that is possibly a thought, but I think it's also a sensitivity to the community and not, you know, and not wanting to raise taxes when everybody was taking a hit.
I can say these things because I don't have kids in the room. Kate Acuff, Rosalind Schmidt from Albemarle County School System. We're talking about public school funding, trying to get some capital improvement funding for new schools, how the schools are being, I guess, overused. Is that a proper word? We'll be right back. Talk a little bit more. All right. A beautiful Sunday outside. Supposed to get in the 70s. Enjoy your day. But wait until after you finish listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call as we talk about public school funding. Rosalind Schmidt, Assistant Director of Facilities Planning, Numbers and Details Guru. That's how you were described to me. The Numbers and Details Guru, Kate Acuff, Albemarle County School Board Chairman, here today as we talk about a lot about the needs of Albemarle County, not just the fact that the daily the operating budget didn't get fully funded, but the fact that the capital improvements has not been met for the last decade and where our school system stands today. A quick question for comparison purposes. For the city of Charlottesville, for nearby counties, are you aware, can you make a comparison in terms of, are those areas, are those school systems, do they also fall into the lineup of underfunded in their capital needs for the school system?
That's a good question. I haven't, I don't know their numbers specifically. Following local news, you know they're struggling for their track right now. That being said, they've had some great projects in their schools. Their science labs were recently updated this summer. So my suspicion is no, but I don't know the numbers specifically.
Okay. So let's talk about the specifics that you do know about. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Albemarle County. Give me a few examples. We don't need to get into numbers specifics, guru number girl. But let's talk about some of the stories that you can tell, because I found those, just the imagery that goes with those, to be sort of head-shaking when you talk about how some of the space is being used.
So two of our most overcrowding issues right now are Greer Elementary and Albemarle High School. Let's start with Greer Elementary. They're located right on the same campus as Albemarle. It's a population that has unique needs from intervention and support staff. So while they're overcrowded in their classroom number, they're severely lacking those smaller resource rooms. So for instance, if I'm a reading teacher that needs to pull out a group of three or five students, she's doing that in a hallway right now. They've run out of space. This summer, they're actually going to lose their stage. We're renovating their stage to carve it up to smaller resource rooms. They are in every nook and cranny. Their gifted teacher takes their students up to Jewett because there's not classroom space for her to work with those students. Similar stories at Albemarle High School, but at a much different scale. Obviously, a high school is much larger than an elementary school. Those teachers, the rooms are being used every period of the day. So when a teacher's on planning and she needs to meet with a student, there's no place to meet with them. We have converted old science prep rooms for teacher workstations. They're literally in closets.
Right. I invite any member of the public. I mean, I will go with them to go and look at some of these spaces. We saw literally closets with a workbench and three chairs where teachers have to timeshare to get space to meet with a student or with a parent. We have at Albemarle High School, which was originally built for 800 students. We're almost 2,000 students now. So even though we've added some structures on over the past 60 years, the core hallways and infrastructure are just too small to accommodate that. And one of the ways we're having to address that is putting trailers. We're buying trailers, mobile classrooms, or euphemistically called learning cottages, on the campuses. We have now over 30 trailers across the county because we are not investing in our bricks and mortar. So that's one story.
Is that unusual for trailers? I can remember. I won't even go back. I won't even give you the year.
Well, but we were
in an elementary school where we had trailers.
That's a common practice of divisions. When they need additional space, you add a trailer. But when we talk, our climate has changed, for instance, from security. Here we are investing millions into the front entrances of
right.
our schools.
Goodness.
Yet we have trailers out back.
Right.
That's true. That is, oh, goodness. So closets and hallways are being used. So the Board of Supervisors are in charge of determining how much money can be put forth on the capital improvements. Have they all visited and taken a tour of the schools that are most needed? Have they all been to Greer? Have they all been to Albemarle? Have they all been to some of these other schools that are overused or need to be updating because their facility is not in any way as modern as some of the others?
I can't speak to what all the supervisors have done. I know that Diantha McKeel, who predated me on the school board, has encouraged them all to do so. But I do think that seeing it is different than understanding it conceptually, and that's one of my tasks going forward in the next few weeks is to schedule some tours of the facilities.
So when you say that you're not sure, does that mean that you don't know for 100%, or you're afraid to say no because may have gone that you're not aware of yet?
I'm not aware of it. I mean, I know, for example, Brad Sheffield has his own children in one of the schools, so he's certainly familiar with that school. That's one of the newer schools, though, and that certainly doesn't give you the impact of overcrowding at Greer, for example. So I don't know. And I think it's true that you can't just go to one school because the needs at the various schools differ enormously. And in terms of the capital, I just want to, one more point. The key thing that is one of the key issues that is driving our capital discussion is capacity. We don't have enough space. But the second one is modernization. And I know some people don't like that terminology because it sounds insignificant, but it is having classrooms and science labs that meet the needs of how we teach our students today. Flexible seating, natural lighting, different kinds of resources in our resource center. I mean, we have some pockets within this in our school division where we have wonderful spaces. And down the hall, well, the third issue is equity, is down the hall you can have a fabulous environmental studies academy lab, but in the same school, Western High School, You have outdated science labs. There's a huge disjunction between what we have already been able to modernize and what we haven't been able to touch yet.
11:30 here on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Our guest, Kate Acuff from Albemarle County School Board. She's the chair. Roslyn Schmidt, she's the assistant director of facilities planning. We're talking about a lot of planning. So let's get into that. Which would you like to discuss next? Because I pulled out my projections of which schools were over. It's not overstaffed.
Overcapacitated.
Overcapacitated. Mm-hmm. And then, Kate, you started talking about modernization. They're both valuable points that we're going to get into in the next 30 minutes. Which would you like to discuss first?
Let's talk capacity first. But okay. I want to make sure we talk about both because they affect different schools differently.
So let's talk about capacity. We were talking about how, because of some of those schools, you were talking about Greer and Albemarle specifically having over capacity.
Is the most acute at right now.
Do you foresee those numbers changing in any way as the county changes? There is fluidity in the county in terms of what areas grow and what is planned ahead. And I realize you said you don't know all the plans. You can't plan for 5 years in the future because you don't know what will be built where.
But there's some things we do know. There's designated development areas in the county, for instance. So while we have growth throughout the county, it's concentrated in schools around what we call the urban ring. So Greer, Agner, Hurt, Woodbrook, we're anticipating Hollymead and Baker Butler up the 29 corridor. So yes, there may be some fluidity in specific locations, but we can say with confidence we know generally where the growth is going to occur. And right now we don't have any indicators that it's going to slow down at this point. Anyone driving up the 29 corridor can see that.
When you start putting these numbers together, can people go online and see this information? I mean, I recognize if you go to, Sean Tubbs certainly covers a lot of this information at Charlottesville
tomorrow.
Yeah,
they do a nice job covering this. It's something we're working on. We realize that we have to be better advocates and educators in this topic. So we, in the coming months, are going to really ramp up our website for the capital program so that this data is more readily accessible.
A lot of structurally what happens for the school board, for example, is the long range planning committee working with Roslyn and her and people at division really take a deep dive into all the schools. And all of those reports are online on the Albemarle County Public School website. So the numbers where you can look at the enrollment and the capacity issues across all the schools is available. I mean, right now we have seven schools. I mean, there's different ways you can look at it. We have 26 schools, seven schools of which are over capacity right now. But another way to look at that, those tend to be our larger schools. So it's 33% of all of our students are in schools that are over capacity. And within 5 years, if we don't do anything, we're looking at over 50% of our schools will be over 50% of our students will be in overcrowded schools. So we really have to act. And I don't think having long-range planning be how to deploy trailers is the best way to go to maintain the quality of our educational enterprise.
Well, I'm looking at the numbers here for the schools, and it's listed here as capacity conflicts and the enrollments, et cetera. And so for a school like Agner-Hurt, easy to see, it's top of the list. It's expected to be over capacity by 6 students. And so somebody may say, 6, what's so bad about that? So explain to me, why is that? Why is 6? I realize it's over the limit, and so therefore it needs to be on the list of schools that are over capacity. But why should that make me stand up and cringe?
Well, I'd offer two comments. First, if it was six and stayed six, it wouldn't be as concerning. It's six and going deeper in the red. It's the trend of the growth continuing that's concerning. And second, I'd say that this is one set of data. Similar to what you're talking about, Greer, this is a classroom deficit. It does not get into deficits of support spaces and resource spaces and other things. And the third piece is pre-K. Pre-K, there's waiting lists of pre-K programs that are not reflected in those numbers either.
Right. And the way our policy has been is to try to house pre-Ks in the same school where those students will eventually go, both to get them familiar with the schools and get their families familiar with the schools. That works the best educationally, but capacity-wise, it puts a crunch. The very schools that have the highest need for pre-K are the schools that have the fastest growth. And so we're in a double crunch. You know, what do we do? Do we turn four-year-olds away because we don't have space? We have to deal with them either in pre-K or intervene all along the way, and probably both. And the other issue is it depends. The capacity numbers give you one snippet of information. Say if we have an average class size goal of 20 students in elementary school, if you have 100 students, that looks like it's five classrooms. Except we have some schools like Greer with almost 80% economically disadvantaged kids, which means they qualify for free and reduced lunch. We also have a high percentage of students where English is a second or other language. And we also have a growing number of special needs students mm-hmm. that this year we had about twice as many as we had planned for. And of those students, they were more severely impaired. For special ed, our classroom size is six, or is it eight?
Eight
students. So you can't look at that 20-student classroom. You have to look at some classrooms need to be eight. And for the other groups of students, we need smaller breakout spaces. So you can't just divide and do the math. So if those six students were special ed students, that is concerning.
And I would assume that all those types that you listed, whether they're special ed students, whether they are ESL, English second language, whether they're
economically disadvantaged,
they all need, or all the schools all require extra support staff.
Right.
And whether that's mm-hmm. space in the school to hang your coat,
right. Mm-hmm.
It all takes up space that could be put to other use for students or classrooms.
That's
right. Or bathrooms,
right. I mean,
or anything else.
Right. So a disproportionate amount of our growth has been in urban ring schools, and a disproportionate amount of that growth has been in these academically challenged groups of students. So we need different kinds of spaces than you can do by simple division. Looking at those numbers.
11:39 on the wake-up call, talking about public school funding, spending a lot of time talking about the capital improvements. And, you know, that was just from talking about, we got on that talking about six students mm-hmm. over capacity at Agner Hurt. And I need to take the glasses off, put the paper in front of my face. Albemarle, 114, 141, 171, 182, 186, growing up to estimated 301 in the year 2025. So, yeah, it's time to do something to get a little extra money, whether it's through a referendum. And really, that's become the way to do it, the expected way to get the money to do this. Tell us about how does a referendum work? Because I don't really know how that happens.
So one of the options to increase revenue to support some of these projects is to issue what are called general obligation bonds. They're different than our current revenue bonds. And that's a lot of jargon to say it's a different funding mechanism. But to issue a general obligation bond, is to actually put a question on the ballot. When voters go to the ballot in November, we're hoping there's a question. It's the best way to get public input on these projects and their support of it. And the second benefit of a referendum and the general obligation bonds is lower interest rates.
Right. It's taking advantage of our AAA bond rating to get much lower rates than we can from the usual mechanisms that we have used. I mean, as I may have mentioned that we're the only division in the state that hasn't only AAA bond rated division in the state that hasn't used a referendum as a mechanism of financing their capital. So we have a very good rating, and we can get cheaper money, and that's the way to do it. And we get community input. They know this is a package of capital projects that we are proposing, and it will be, we're hopeful, it hasn't been approved by the Board of Supervisors yet, but we've been in discussions for some time about it, and we will have to, if they approve it next month, then it will go on the ballot in November, and that will be financed in 2017. Mm-hmm. But even if that happens, we won't probably see a shovel in the ground for until 18. So that means any projects would be 19 or 20.
But I'm glad, and Kate, I want to mention that the referendum is not a done deal at this point.
No.
The Board of Supervisors, they were supposed to tackle it at their work session on Wednesday and haven't gotten to it. So if anyone, I just want to make sure that's clear.
It sounds like
we need to continue to...
sounds like me cutting the grass. It's like, I really don't want to do that. I'll wait until next week. I really don't want to do that. I'll wait until next week. No, I really... And now it's above my knees, and I can't get to it.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. We have tried to make the case to the Board of Supervisors and increasingly to the community that this is a critical need. And in order for us, and this time in this budget that was passed this week, only 13% of the capital for schools went to new projects, one of which was a modernizing Red Hill Elementary School, which has long been long overdue for some upgrades. It doesn't even meet the state standards for the size of its library, for example. So we have had virtually no capital projects funded through the normal budgeting. So it is critical, in my view, to get a referendum on the ballot in November so we can start addressing these issues in the next 3 to 5 years.
11:43 on the wake-up call. All right, Rick Moore here, Sunday morning wake-up call in action with Kate Acuff, Albemarle County School Board Chair, Rosalind Schmidt, Assistant Director of Facilities Planning from Albemarle County School System. We're talking about the Capital Improvements Project, things that are long overdue. We're talking about the referendum. So what... There's no guarantee that the bond referendum will even be on the November ballot. But wishful thinking, good hope, good karma, all those needy things that we'd like. What would the money go to first? What are some of these projects? Because I'm assuming that it seems like looking at the numbers at the sheet, everything that we would like to have happen or that we have fallen even a little bit behind on is not going to happen at the first shovel in the ground, I think was the imagery that made me smile. Mm-hmm. So what would we get started with?
We have gone through a process of a long list of capital improvements that we'd like to do, and the Board of Supervisors has asked us to sort of think about two rounds of referenda. One, and the first one has five different elements on it.
So the board and school board in March had looked at their capital improvement program, which is a five-year program, and they zoomed in on the next 2 years. And what are those critical needs in the next 2 years, and have identified five key projects. The first is a security improvement project, which improves the front entrance. It is actually, I want to just be clarified, it's actually in the adopted CIP right now, but this, in a general obligation bond, would be lower interest rates. That's improving the front entrances at Baker Butler Elementary, Scottsville Elementary, Henley Middle School, and Murray High School. The second project is an addition onto Woodbrook Elementary. We haven't mentioned Woodbrook yet, but that is a solution for the Greer issue as well as the Agnew Hurt that you mentioned, and Woodbrook itself. Again, it's the growth in that urban ring area. The third project is modernization, which Kate spoke to earlier, too. Can you speak to that more?
And the modernization is about $10 million, I think, a little over $10.9 million. And what we've asked Roslyn's department to do is to look at modernization projects that would touch every school in the county. Those can be upgrading the science labs, upgrading some of the modular furniture for students to do projects. But the original proposal from the Long Range Planning Committee was about 10 times this amount of money over the next decade, but we felt it critically important to start on that process with this $10.9 million.
So then the other two projects on the referendum are, planning for Albemarle High School. So as we mentioned, Albemarle High School's growth is one of our biggest issues right now, but that solution's complex. It could involve a new high school. It could involve an addition onto Albemarle. There's just going to be some extensive planning needed for that. And then the last one is improvements to Western Albemarle Science Labs that supports their Environmental Studies Academy as well as improving their existing science labs. So in summary, every part of the county.
Right. Our goal was to do projects that alleviated our capacity needs, in elementary schools, plan for solution to Albemarle High School, because a longstanding policy has been not to let Albemarle get more than 2,000 students, which it's bubbling right below that number now, and to begin our modernization program throughout the county.
11:48, just a few minutes left with our guests today, Roslyn Schmidt, Kate Acuff from Albemarle County Schools. Roslyn, you said something in that one of the lists, or one of the items in the list, mm-hmm. was about Woodbrook. Mm-hmm. Can you mention that one again?
So Woodbrook Elementary, those are not familiar. It's located behind Chorus Brothers, right off 29. It's our smallest elementary school in the urban ring area, and that's the location that our long-range planning advisory committee and our school board has identified as needing expansion to support not only the growth in that particular school, but all the surrounding schools as well.
And you said something about how that would help Greer and Agnew Hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thought, I didn't realize you were going to expand it, mm-hmm. which sort of answers the question in my head. But it made me think about redistricting, because I know that there's been a redistricting committee. Because for some people, I don't know if the Board of Supervisors falls into this category, that some of these problems of overcapacity can be solved by redistricting on a frequent basis.
I think that era has passed. I think that train has moved on. We've had successive rounds of redistricting to redistribute our students to where there has been excess capacity. But in the Citizens Redistricting Advisory Committee looked at redistricting solutions for Greer, and they concluded that there was no redistricting solution for Greer that was viable and that it was time for the county to take a proactive look at addressing capacity needs, and particularly in the urban ring. And that is why we're looking at Woodbrook. As Roslyn said, our urban ring schools, if you look at them, Cale Elementary is down by Monticello. It's over 700 students. Greer Elementary is over 600 students. Agnew Hurt is about 550, and our smallest urban ring school, Woodbrook, which is at the northern end of the urban ring, is about 350. It's historically been about 100 students bigger, but some of those students were moved to Baker Butler when that school was built in 2002. But it is now growing also. So it's much smaller than the urban ring, other urban ring schools, and it has the land space that could accommodate the addition that we're contemplating.
So to be transparent, though, when you build a new school, there will be some redistricting involved in filling that school. I think there's a different process for parents moving students into a redistricting is always tough. I'm not going to paint that rosy picture, but there's a difference between redistricting to an existing school versus redistricting where there's new space in a new school.
Right.
You're not talking about redistricting to take 350 kids to fill an empty school versus moving 16 kids out of this neighborhood to a different school and 18 kids from this. That's a lot different.
And the Woodbrook project will include, I mean, in addition to adding classrooms, they will include some modernization. It'll make it, that school is pretty old. I mean, it has had some modifications, I think the new library space several years ago, but it will also modernize that space. And, you know, we have a lot of, it's also at the size, some of the parents are very supportive. Existing parents at Woodbrook are very supportive because it's just under the threshold to get an assistant principal, a full-time librarian, a full-time music teacher. And as it gets bigger, it will have those additional resources. It'll be a more robust school. And it will be consistent with the sizes of our other schools in the urban ring.
How do you decide which schools to modernize first? Because I think one of the, and I'll never be able to find it in all these notes that I have, but you talk about what's fair and what's unfair to different folks, whether that's within the same school and which classroom is working with more modern equipment than the other classroom down the hall or at the other side of the building, or the fact that this elementary school is newer and has more the classroom that you can, I forget what phrase was used, but you can break apart and
more adaptable class space
versus the school on the other side of 29 that does not, because it's an older generation. How do you make those decisions that affect, I mean, families and the way you grow up and then learn to live your life?
So when we began this initiative, I guess it's probably been since 2013, we did a classroom-by-classroom evaluation where we walked every space and filled out our evaluation on quality of the furniture, presence of daylighting, connection to other classrooms. And so we have a full evaluation of all 900-plus classrooms in this division with a kind of a matrix of where they are on the spectrum. It's easy to see patterns and trends. It's due to the era of the building, the original building. And our biggest deficits are at our secondary schools. Most of our middle schools and Western and original portions of some portions of Albemarle were built in the 1970s. That's an era where daylight energy was valued, so there's minimal windows, a lot of internal classrooms. Middle schools, we have not had any capacity issues, so there hasn't been a lot of new construction on a school like Walton, for instance. And so when there's not new construction, the existing spaces have been ignored. So general trends have been at our secondary levels.
Right. I mean, one of the directions, though, the school board gave to Roslyn and was that we wanted the modernization effort to touch all schools in some way. And so we have projects at each school that will be impacted by that $10.9 million over 2 years.
And I ask this not expecting to get a real answer, but does it matter whose kids are in which school on the school board or on the board of supervisors? Because I can tell you that I've lived in the same home for 15 years, and I can tell when someone from the board of supervisors, or that's not true, it wasn't the board of supervisors, someone from the DMV moved onto my road, because my road was no longer a tertiary road for snow plowing, but became a secondary road for snow plowing. And so it's things like that that make people question things like, oh, well, they're going to, so-and-so's kids, and you mentioned Brad Sheffield having gone to, you're sure that he went to that school because his kids go there?
Well, he may have visited all the schools. I wasn't trying to say
that. I just float back to that, but you said his kids were in a
One of the newer schools.
One of the newer schools. So, but we'll, I'll pick on that just because. So, oh, Brad Sheffield's kids go there. So that school got that.
Now, I would have to say pretty emphatically that the processes that we have in place sort of prevent that. I mean, we have the Long Range Planning Advisory Committee, which was supported by Rosalind's work, but it's an independent group of citizen volunteers that work very, very hard over the course of a year. And they do the work. They walk the schools. They make their recommendations. Then we as a school board react to those recommendations, and we make our capital needs list. And that it then goes through two other oversight committees before it goes to the Board of Supervisors. So I am confident that that bias is stripped out of it. And we are really looking at needs. And it, and I have to say it's challenging when there's so many needs for modernization to pick this or that, because the list of needs might have been different if we hadn't said every school needs to be touched. And I'm sure that's the case. But we've tried to do it, Rosalind, by the size of the school, isn't that? I mean, I know that you have a list of the dollar amounts per school, but I've forgotten how you've arrived at that. but the charge was to make sure every school sees an improvement.
Just 2 minutes left here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call with our guests, Rosalind Schmidt and Kate Acuff. As we talk about public schools, the Capital Improvements Project, you're hoping to get the referendum on the ballot in November. Mm-hmm. Let's say that it makes it. What does the school board and any other, the school system, do to promote the project for the citizens to vote the way that you want them to?
Well, we cannot directly advocate for the referendum.
Can you have super PACs that do so?
Well, what we will do is provide information about the needs. I mean, we can certainly provide information about the needs, why we've chosen the projects we've chosen, what the history of funding for capital improvements have been, why a referendum is a more robust and more cost-efficient way to go forward. And I anticipate we will hold public meetings and get the information out there to the public. As I said, it is a very common mechanism for financing not only schools but other capital needs like courthouses and fire stations throughout the state. And our goal is first to persuade the Board of Supervisors on their vote next month, and then to go forward with educating the community about its importance.
Thank you both very much for coming on today. I've learned a lot, and hope we'll put the podcast up and we can spread the word, and hopefully others can learn too.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Best of luck. All right.
Best
folks.
Of luck for you.
Hopefully everyone will tune in next week. We'll have Dr. Chris Winter here. We'll be talking about sleep patterns, how to get the best out of what you need. Thanks, folks.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.